afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Friday, April 27th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy fabulous Friday, Melody.
Oh boy, I'll tell you, it's a Friday that was needed this week, and I'm certainly looking forward to this weekend. Although I'll be working most of the weekend, but in fact, all day long I thought it was the 28th. I think I even wrote a check that had the 28th on it, but
what's going on the 28th? Something must be in the back of your mind about that.
Well, that's tomorrow. It's a Saturday. I'll be working in the office in the morning, and I just think it's finally spring has sprung, and it's beach weather, so maybe.
And get your feet in the sand, if nothing else.
Yes, and gold today, it kind of like the springy weather today. It sprung up $7 in the aftermarket New York spot price. $7, $1,324. Silver was up a penny at $16.58. Platinum was up $8 at $918. And palladium was down $13 at $976. A little pressure on the dollar, no big deal. Down 0.06 at $91.50. Crude oil was down 10 cents at $68.09. Paper markets today. Some numbers are coming through. You got the Dow down 11 points at 24,310. The NASDAQ is up 1 at 71.19. The S&P was up 3 at 2,669. And 10-year yield pulled back under the 3 at 2.96%. And the euro was up, I guess. European markets were strong, I guess, on the news of the North and South Korea meeting. Still have a little fear in the markets. And so, again, it's when you have manipulated markets, news doesn't matter, but we're going to talk about it anyway. We're going to talk about some of the items that should have affected the markets today. And I think the North and South Korea agreement, I think many have heard this pledge to jointly eliminate the risk of war and work together. And they're looking to achieve complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. This was the joint statement today. It was released. And it's a historic one-day bilateral summit aimed at achieving peace between the longtime adversaries for the first time in more than 60 years. Well, you know, if you watch the pictures and the video of them, it's a little creepy. They're holding hands, they're hugging. I don't know what is going on. We saw Trump and Macron hugging and holding hands, and now we have these guys hugging and holding hands.
It's a good week for geopolitical love.
I guess make love not war.
There you go. That's right.
But the two Koreans are shake hands, not war. The two Koreans promised to ease military tensions, work together. And I don't think there was a lot of details that were released. They're going to continue to hold some high-level military meetings in the next month. The president of South Korea, Moon, he's been scheduled to visit Pyongyang in the fall. And, of course, we have the meeting with President Trump. You know, they haven't determined whether it was going to be May or June. So it sort of took the world by surprise. You've had these two states that have been hostile for years and years, since 1950, basically. That war, I believe, seen well over a million people killed. So technically, because there was never a peace treaty, they've still been at war since that time, even though there was, I guess, an armistice signed in mid-1950s rather than a peace agreement. And so the peninsula has been divided since about 1945.
Yeah, that's true. And I have a feeling we haven't seen a lot of details from this meeting, because there are really not a whole lot substantive things that occurred. Yeah, I believe that's what seems to be implied here. I mean, we know that North Korea's imprisoned, tortured, and killed so many of its own citizens for, you know, either trying to defect to the South or for being suspected South Korean spies or sympathizers. South Korea estimates that the North has abducted more than 3,800 South Koreans since that 1953 armistice was signed. Family members that are separated by the peninsula's dividing line are still forbidden from being reunited. Two previous summits between the two countries that have been held since 2000 have failed to produce any positive results. So while denuclearization has long been a priority for South Korea and the West, certainly the United States, Kim now appears supportive based on this latest summit, although its success has got to be viewed as far from guaranteed. I mean, details such as agreeing on the definition of what denuclearization is something that still has to be presumably negotiated and agreed upon. So the summit between Kim and Moon follows, you know, a long time of North Korean missile tests, threats from the North, and does precede an upcoming meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump that's now expected to take place sometime next month or in early June. And that would be the first meeting between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader in history.
You know, everybody's watching and, you know, all the commentaries and analysts and, you know, something to be optimistic about, but everybody's waiting and holding their breath to see if anything actually comes of this. And it kind of reminds me of China, the way they do business is, you know, you come to the table with smiles and friendship and offering friendship
and holding hands
but they're not your friend, they're still your enemy, and not to be trusted. My point is, and I said this on the earlier show today, if the North and the South are doing such a great job of coming together, why does the United States even have to have a meeting, you know, other than our military being there and protecting the region?
That's probably big. That's probably the reason for us to be at the table, other than the fact that Kim supposedly has these intercontinental ballistic missiles now that could possibly reach the west coast of the United States, right?
Yes, I forgot that they can reach the United States, but if they're willing to denuclearize, hey?
Yeah. You know. Yep, let us get on with our own business, right?
Yes. And we forget, too, that he has kept the families apart, but he's also killed his own family.
Yeah.
He killed his half-brother, was it his half-brother?
Yeah.
And his uncle.
Yeah.
So how do you change in a very short period of time? His half-brother was just killed, what, a year ago, 2 years ago? Three, maybe, at the most. Time flies. It's hard to keep track. But I don't know. But, he knows he has the support of Russia. He knows he has the support of China, and he knows he has the support of Iran. And so, but there's a Harry Kazinas. He's the director of defense studies at the Center for National Interest. He says, it might just be for the moment. It's going to be filled with countless photo designs to pull at your heart when really nothing is much achieved.
Yeah, Melody, history and wordsmith buffs out there might know that. I mean, they talked about, Kazianis talked about, you know, this photo op being nothing more than a Potemkin moment. Potemkin, interestingly, is a term that was originally tied to a Potemkin village, which is anything meant to deceive others into thinking that a situation is better than it really is. The term Potemkin village comes from stories of fake portable villages that were built solely to impress Empress Catherine II by her former lover Grigori Potemkin during her journey into Crimea in the late 1700s. You know, some modern historians claim that accounts of this portable village are exaggerated or even false, but the original story was that Grigori Potemkin erected these phony portable settlements along the banks of the Dnieper River in order to fool the Russian Empress as her barge would come down the river from city to city on its way to Crimea. Then after she passed a certain village, Potemkin and his men would disassemble the structures, and they'd, I guess, go by horseback quickly and reassemble these fake structures farther along the route. So anyway, that's the story of Potemkin Village and how it ties to this. Well, maybe there's a lot less than what meets the eye in this case with this summit between the north and south. Anyway, sorry for that sidebar.
No worries. So you know, we'll have to see what this summit, how it comes. Because Zionist thinks that the only movie, I'm going to let you take away, for the rest of North Korea. I'm not a, I got a little sidetracked from that. To be honest with you, Dave, I got a little sidetracked with that.
With my sidebar.
With your sidebar.
I'm sorry. Well, the moment when Kim and Moon shook hands, you know, Kim crossing over to South Korea, you know, then Moon crossing back over to North Korea for these photo ops. I mean, they were truly historic, in and of themselves. In terms of the potential of something good and substantive happening when Kim and Trump meet next month, and when Kim and Moon follow up again, either before or after the Trump meeting, I mean, that's something that we can deservedly be hopeful about. But what happens next is where things get tricky, because the U.S. now has to push the North to turn these promises into real action and results. I mean, that means for Trump and Kim, North Korea has to put to paper sharing with the U.S. how it plans to denuclearize. You know, it's clear what it means to South Korea, Japan, and to us. It means no nukes. But beyond that, does it mean, no fissionable uranium? There are a lot of details that are going to have to take place here. I mean, a plan that includes agreeing to the full accounting of all of Kim's atomic weapons, a listing of all the materials he can use to make additional warheads, as well as a detailed accounting of the North's various offensive missiles, the short, intermediate, and long-term intercontinentals. The big question is, what is he going to want in return for his denuclearization? That could be the crux of our whole negotiation with North Korea, because it just isn't going to be a one-sided deal, right? I mean, it's not just, well, okay, I hear you, I know you're concerned and worried, but I'm not just going to denuclearize without anything in return. So, what are you thinking?
Well, you know what I find strange about this whole deal is, you would think, considering the history, that first we send Pompeo over on his own, even before he was Secretary of State. Then we have Moon, the North and the South coming together, having their own meetings. You know, you would think from the beginning the United States should have been involved the meeting should have included everyone. So now you have these two leaders who are out there patting themselves on the back. The world is, all right, we're going to have peace on the Korean Peninsula. And then we're going to meet with the U.S. and the U.S. is going to, and he's going to give his demands. And the U.S. is going to say, uh-uh. And guess who comes out looking bad? Kim comes out looking like a charmer, wanting to, you know, make peace and, you know, sign peace treaties and denuclearize. And we're saying, this is, you can't have what you want. And the United States comes out looking, you know, that we're the bad guy, when in essence, it's just, you know.
No, I hear what you're saying. I mean, back in 2010, North Korea wanted $10 billion just to attend, I mean, in foreign aid, just to attend a summit with South Korea. You know, you can imagine what his asking price is going to be, you know, to give up his only weapon of war that could stop a future U.S. or its allies' effort at deposing his regime, which, you know, one has got to, you know, assume is foremost, you know, on his mind. So, you know, hey, if Kim is truly willing to give up his nuclear weapons and submit to, you know, indefinite inspections, and we can meet whatever his demands turn out to be, you know, then perhaps, you know, there's good reason to be hopeful for this upcoming summit. Otherwise, you know, it's North Korea continues to demand extended talks that could go on for months or years without any results, and just tag the international community along for, you know, for his humor, you know, and he is truly recycling this Potemkin Village playbook. Mm-hmm. You know, and what happens next in that scenario is, as we like to say, anybody's guess.
Well, the next scenario is going to be, we're going to be talking about the GDP. It came in a little weaker than expected. The GDP rose at a 2.3% annualized rate after climbing 2.9% in the prior quarter. The Commerce Department reported that earlier this morning. It's still higher than the first quarter estimated of 2.0%, but a big drop from everyone as estimating a 3% GDP growth that, you know, everyone was expecting. Separate Labor Department showed that, or I should say, a 3% GDP that we were promised, not expected, but promised, or higher, we were promised. Separate Labor Department report showed that the employment costs rose more than expected in the first quarter, and a measure of private wages had the biggest annual gain since 2008.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Melody Cederstrom and Dave Allen at your service. And Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And every time my buyers get the 90% AUBU dimes in or quarters, I buy them. And he's sending me a selection, although I sold most of it today, but I still have some left, $320, $25 face value. It's great value. And we have on special 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagles. For those of you who like fractional gold, it's a great time. You save about $5 per coin, which is a lot when you're looking at a 1/10 of an ounce. I mean, you're looking at $50 per ounce that you're saving. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188, 800-375-4188. Going into the break, we were talking about the GDP, that it was a lot lower than I expected it to be, you know, with all their tax cuts and, you know, stock market and great earnings and all this kind of stuff. I really expected it to be a little bit more than what it was. I didn't expect it to be 3%. Actually, we'll see if they don't readjust it to it actually being lower, since I don't believe the economy is as strong as what they're telling us, Dave.
No, and as you mentioned, you know, the 2.3% pace of growth is still faster than what the Federal Reserve sees as the economy's long-term potential rate. You know, investors now seem to be expecting the Fed to raise interest rates in June for the second time this year. But even so, the results underline the difficulty of achieving the president's goal of 3%. Sustained growth, that is, despite corporate and individual tax cuts that went into effect in January. You know, other figures today around the world also cast a shadow over the strong synchronized global upswing, as it were. You know, Europe's economy lost momentum in the first quarter as well, as expansion slowed from the UK to France, partly because of winter storms there that ripped through the region. You know, back here, consumer spending, the biggest part of our economy, rose about 1.1% annualized, that matching estimates and marking the smallest gain since 2013. You know, business equipment spending and residential investment also cooled, the government citing a downturn in broker commissions on home sales. And spending on non-residential structures and intellectual property, which we'll talk more about in the next segment, accelerated during this period, limiting any broader slowdown. The report also showed price pressures are picking up. This we've known about now for several weeks. The GDP price index rose 2% in the first quarter. That's another measure of inflation tied to consumer spending, but it excludes the volatile food and energy costs. That advanced at a 2.5% annualized pace, the fastest since 2011. And as Melody mentioned, the Labor Department figure showed the employment cost index, which includes wages and benefits, rose about 0.8% from the previous quarter, topping the median estimate of 0.7%. Private sector wages and salaries advanced 2.9% from a year earlier. That's the most of the expansion, following a 2.8% increase the month before. And in the GDP report, after adjusting for inflation, final sales to domestic purchasers rose at a 1.6% clip. Meanwhile, changes in U.S. trade and tariff policies seem to be posing a risk to the outlook. The economy may expand 2.8% in 2018, but that's going to slow in the following couple of years. That, according to a number of economists at Bloomberg, Melody.
The economy. How could the economy spend? We're 70% plus consumer spending. Consumers are tapped out, either through their debt that they have acquired. We have record credit card debt. Where are they going to get more debt? Well, they might find more debt because they're changing the credit scores. The credit scores will go lower. So a lot of those who couldn't get credit, now it'll be easier for them to get
credit. Now they will qualify for subprime loans.
Absolutely. And just anything they will do to keep this economy going and not collapsing. So it's hard to imagine a 3+% even with the taxes. You look at our healthcare and everything else is rising. So how they expect the economy to expand at a 3+% growth, it's beyond my imagination, but they're the ones who get the big bucks. And we were talking about North and South Korea, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this when we first came into the program, but I saw this article today and it just really irritated me. And I think most of us remember after the 2008 all the bailouts that we had, and GM was one of them. And I can remember doing shows with Dr. Stanley Monteith, and we were upset because these billions of dollars were going to GM, and they were taking that money and using it to build factories in other parts of the world. They weren't doing anything. We weren't putting that money back here into the States. They were going around the world with their building plants, and GM did the same thing. And this is what irritates me. $4.4 billion bailout. Another bailout, GM. But they're not getting it from the United States this time, which I guess is good. But they're getting it in South Korea. So we bail them out so they can build the plants in South Korea. And then they get the government. And this is the government of South Korea. And GM have agreed to inject $4.4 billion into the automaker's operations in the country, which had been in danger of falling into bankruptcy. Under the terms of the deal, the state-owned Korean Development Bank will invest a fresh $750 million into GM Korea, and GM is going to fork over $3.6 billion. The agreement includes a commitment by GM to stay in the market for at least another decade. GM Korea, which operates 4 assembly plants and 4 engine plants, has been losing money for years. GM owns 77% of the unit, which lost 148 billion in 2017, which is about 139 million in US dollars. The KDB has a 17% stake in the operation, and the remaining shares, okay? The remaining shares are held by Chinese automaker SAIC Motor. Now, here you have Chinese automaker who most likely is owned by the Chinese government. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
One's got to believe so.
You'd have to believe so. And you also now you have, a state-owned Korean Development Bank giving loans to GM. So how does that all work through a multinational corporation getting loans from governments? It's an interesting question. How does that affect, the GM US and future ownership, future commitments, allegiances?
That's a good question, to which I don't know the answer. We might have to consult the president's accountant for that answer. But it's one of the, I guess we'll call it the ironic beauties of having tentacles all over the world if you're a multinational corporation, because you seem to be able to get the best of all worlds. in situations like these.
So when I hear about buying American, it's a little frustrating because there isn't anything that you buy American anymore. And now you buy a GM vehicle that's partly owned by China. I mean, they can call in those loans anytime they want, just like our banks can. Owned by China, owned by not North Korea, but South Korea. And we're loosening the regulations. Who do these regulations now truly benefit? And you have China. Sure, there was talks of tariffs, and you have China. They agreed to loosen up their auto markets for the United States. But was it really for the United States, or was it really for South Korea? For GM to funnel those automobiles up there, because after all, China, I guess, is a part of GM. Golly gee. You talk about connecting dots and they never you'd never hear anyone put anything together. And maybe I'm a little off, but I don't think I'm that far off of seeing all the connections with, you know, these tariffs and for what? For the people of the United States?
No, for the stockholders. It's all about, absolutely, you know, what's good for the foreign state. What is good for the corporation and its stockholders?
Absolutely. So when you all hear about the trickle down, you can ask exactly who is it trickling down to?
That is the question.
Yes. So anyway, I saw that today, and that just, and I know these loans have been going on for, they've been talking about these loans for a couple of years and so forth, but now it's like everything is coming together, and it just kind of, you know.
Yeah.
So much for taxpayer bailouts, ladies and gentlemen.
Oof.
This is your payoff.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah.
You know, we can jump back for a second to other economic news we were talking about before your jump overseas there. You know, we saw that the latest monthly report talked about wage gains, and now some economists and observers are believing that the latest wage reports could nudge the Fed toward raising interest rates 4 times this year, not the 3 that officials had penciled in for 2018, particularly as the Fed met in March. You know, after raising rates last month, Fed Chair Jerome Powell and his colleagues were widely expected to hold policy steady at their 2-day meeting next week. They're not going to provide a quarterly update of their expectations for, you know, their rate path until they get together in June, when it's almost certain now they'll have another 0.25% increase. At their meeting in March, Melody, we know that a majority of the Federal Open Market Committee was pretty evenly split between whether to raise rates 3 times or 4 this year. So it probably isn't going to take a whole lot more to push that forecast up to 4. And another data point suggesting that 4 rate hikes are coming this year, a 2.5% annualized increase in the personal consumption expenditures price index, which we mentioned earlier, the PCE, excluding food and energy. That statistic, contained in the first quarter report of GDP released this morning, compares with the Fed's overall target of 2%. That's what, 22.5, that's 25% higher than the Fed's overall inflation target. So we'll have to follow that this coming Monday when that figure is released.
I don't know. See, I don't believe that they'll be able to use economic data in order to raise rates. I think they'll raise rates in June, and I think that's the last we're going to see for the rest of the year. Because I think come fall, I think the markets will be so volatile that they're not going to risk, they won't risk any more rate increases after June. That's my prediction. And so they'll do one in June. But I don't think they'll do any more, because I think it's just going to push these levels too high. Now, I suppose some things could adjust, and you know, regardless of the reports that come out and so forth. But nah, there's no way. There's no way they're going to be able to do more rate increases after June. So write that prediction down, ladies and gentlemen.
I just did.
Did you? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because if I'm a betting man, who am I gonna, you know, believe? These thousands of pundits out there, the vast majority of whom have some kind of ties to a specific company or companies or the paper market in general, or someone who's been telling the truth with honesty for the last 20 some years, Melody Cederstrom, I got your back, girl. Because you've got ours.
Thank you.
Well, why don't you tell us about this thing we're hearing about Deutsche Bank, that supposedly, you know, I guess it overstated its what it could do in the U.S.
Well, you know, Deutsche Bank is one of those banks that's kind of like the bunny rabbit keeps on going and going and going. I mean, they've been fined for all their corruption and all their ill will trades that they've done. They're big manipulators of gold and silver. They're the big problem. And the U.S. was going to fine them, and they just about went belly up. But I guess they're still trying to hang in there, as they're planning to cut more than 10% of the U.S. jobs as it withdraws from businesses where it can't compete. So 10% of U.S. jobs. The U.S. counts about 10,300 employees of the Deutsche Bank, about a tenth of the firm's global workforce. The bank dismissed 400 U.S.-based staff this week, asking not to be identified, as the details weren't public. These appear to be initial long-planned cuts, first reported by Bloomberg in February. They're now going to accelerate, and eventually they're going to total more than 1,000 U.S. employees. Deutsche Bank Chief Executive Officer Christian Sewing said that the firm is going to restructure the investment bank, including the scaling back of operations in the United States. And see, when we talk about restructure, that's just a nicer, kinder way of saying bankrupt.
Yeah.
They're bankrupt.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is...
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. And we have a $25 face value of 90% silver. Dimes, AUBUs, $320. If you purchase two packages, you get free shipping. And you can add a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle to the package for $145. It's a great little deal. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. And I don't think there's any announcements I need to make. So let's go on. And Dave, I know you're fond of the Brevity is Golden.
Our weekly segment, Melody, Brevity is Golden. Now, I'm just taking a guess that there's some listeners who aren't major fans of the Kennedy family of yesteryear. Whatever your political persuasion and political philosophy Netflix is
actually
laying...
John, listeners, you know, John Kennedy was trying to do some good things.
He was in the midst when he was mowed down. I believe his younger brother Bobby was going to do a lot of the same. He was once called the most likely American in the 20th century to become president, but Robert F. Kennedy's bid to follow in Jack's footsteps as commander-in-chief was cut short the same way his brother was by a man with a gun. And now, 50 years later, Bobby Kennedy's life and transformation is coming to Netflix in a new 4-part documentary series that is available for binge watching today. Through archival footage and interviews with friends and staffers, Bobby Kennedy for President, as it's entitled, takes an in-depth look at what drove him to seek public office, the events that shaped him, and his legacy now decades after his assassination. The series, Melody, opens with a broadcaster's prediction that no American in this century has ever been so likely to be president as Robert Francis Kennedy. Gosh, I hope that didn't sound like Walter Cronkite. It takes viewers through Kennedy's combative time as Attorney General and his depression after his brother's death, entry into the 68 presidential race, and his assassination a short 83 days later. You know, the documentary reportedly explores Kennedy's growth on issues like civil rights through the guidance of black leaders like John Lewis, now veteran congressman from Georgia. In documenting Kennedy's journey from a cop at heart lawyer to polished politician, it highlights experiences that affected him, like a trip to the Mississippi Delta that opened his eyes to rural hunger. Viewers hear from key figures in Kennedy's life, including Paul Schrade, who was shot in the head when 24-year-old Sirhan Sirhan fired at Kennedy on June 5th, 1968. The series also features interviews from Sirhan's brother, Manure Sirhan, as well as Juan Romero, the iconic ambassador hotel busboy who was at Kennedy's side as he uttered his last words, "Is everybody okay?" For Romero, who was a Mexican immigrant, it was one of the few times he has openly spoken about Kennedy's death, something he had felt guilty about for years, probably survivor's guilt because he was so close to him, since Kennedy stopped to shake his hand right before the gunshots. Now, at a time when distrust of politicians is high, the director and executive producer of this series, Dawn Porter, said she hopes The series reminds viewers that people serving in public office can be human and flawed, but also inspirational. She said, without saying Kennedy was the perfect person, there's something comforting and inspiring about his willingness to try, his willingness to learn, his willingness not to give up. And right now, all we need is a little dose of not giving up. And that melody is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Well, you know, it's funny, the comment about, the politicians, and today is a whole different world. The corruption today is, I wonder, it kind of makes you wonder exactly what they would say in today's world. But what's interesting, I haven't heard anyone talk about this, but on Thursday, President Trump did release some additional archives of the John F. Kennedy assassination records.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, but he did move a deadline to 2021. So there is some. I guess there were 19,000 documents that were released.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also some that were kept until 2021.
Oh, and then the rest of them are going to be released then.
Well, there was also, I saw a comment that Trump said in a statement, he agrees with the recommendation that the continued withholdings are necessary to protect. It goes on and on. But it sounds like the part that he's withholding will probably never get released.
Ah, gotcha.
But they'll just extend it. But the documents that were released on Thursday, they contain redactions, of course. And I didn't hear anyone talk about that. I wanted to bring it to the program yesterday and failed to. So I'm glad you brought that up. So it reminded me to let the listeners know about those additional pages. And you can find them online. Just Google it now, and it'll take you to the records if you'd like.
No, it's good. Thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely. So, what's next, ladies and gentlemen? Yesterday, we did talk a little bit about Ford planning to cut back its car sales in the U.S. How about a U.S. delegation heading to China to ward off a possible trade war?
Yeah.
Not a lot of talk on that.
It's apparently moving.
Moving to China. But you have this envoy going to China next week in an effort to head off a spiraling trade battle. And one thing I do want to get to before we end is I saw there was a press conference with Merkel? I haven't had a chance to follow up on that. You did. So maybe when we get done with the China, you can make you can bring us up to date on the meeting with Angela Merkel in D.C. today. But back to the China envoy. This is an effort to head off any type of a trade battle. I saw today Larry Kudlow came out and he says, there's no war. We're still negotiating on this. There's a lot of policy experts that said President Trump may have missed out on another opportunity to take on China's trade practices and secure America's economic role in Asia. On a recent visit, you had the Prime Minister Abe had encouraged Trump to reconsider joining the TPP, which was a trade pact between 11 nations around the Pacific Rim. Trump actually said he might reconsider it, but he dismissed the idea, saying it was not in the best interest of America. Trump is sending Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, as well as the trade officials Robert Lighthizer and Peter Navarro to China. It's unclear what is going to come of these types of talks, but they are intended to head off a tit-for-tat type of a trade skirmish. So,
yeah, I mean, there's some question now about, how this is going to tie with the Trans-Pacific Partnership that the president has said we're withdrawing from, whether the talks with China could lead to, possible reconsideration of that. I mean, we know the TPP was envisioned to be part of, a counterbalance to China's growth. You know, it seemed to make sense then. It seems to make sense now in some respects. Yet there's still a number of stumbling blocks. And even if Trump wanted to reconsider the TPP, there are apparently a lot of hurdles to the U.S. returning to it. But we just might find our farmers and businesses are at a somewhat of a disadvantage because they're not a part of it. For example, Kim Wallace, who's managing director at the Eurasia Group, said that the member countries would find it difficult to meet our demands to improve the TPP in America's favor. New Zealand, which was an early member of the TPP, said the U.S. simply can't jump back into the agreement, though we would be welcomed. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said recently that she could see the U.S. rejoining, but not without renegotiation, and that would have to be approved by all 11 countries, including Canada, Australia, Mexico, Malaysia, Singapore, Chile, Vietnam, Peru, and the country of Brunei. Melody.
Well, let's see, how much time do we have? Let's go back and see if we can't recap a little bit about the Trump and Merkel press conference. I know she didn't get a big of a welcome as the French President Macron did, but she's still an important player, whether we agree or disagree with her. I don't know if it was, I'm not even sure why she came. I'm not sure why all of these European leaders are coming to the United States. It certainly does.
The post G20, probably.
You think?
Yeah, it's like my guess. It was just it was sort of a Gilligan trip. It was a 3-hour visit to the White House. It was her first trip since first trip here. Might even her first trip outside of Germany since. She won re-election to her fourth term. And apparently they talked about North Korea, trade in general, and Iran and the Iran deal. We know she didn't get a state dinner, as Emmanuel Macron did. Although, again, this was, who knows if she even got lunch based on their relationship. Although Trump at the press conference did say they have a good working relationship. So, hey, that's got to be progress. Now, let's see what else. Apparently, they talked a lot about North Korea and also the Iran nuclear deal, but not saying a whole lot, Melody, about the details of those topics.
Okay. All righty. Well, what else do we want to talk about? We're almost out of time today. We got about 3 minutes left on the day.
There is. It's kind of more on the trade look. The U.S. Actually this morning. Coming out of the trade rep's office was labeling Canada and 35 other countries, actually criticizing them for inadequately protecting U.S. intellectual property rights, keeping China on its so-called priority watch list for the 14th straight year, and adding Canada to that list for extra scrutiny. The so-called Special 301 report on intellectual property rights, calls out China for its coercive technology transfer practice and its trade secret thefts, rampant online piracy, and counterfeit manufacturing. We know that as a condition for allowing U.S. businesses to operate in their country, they require them to turn over essentially the secrets of their goods that they want to sell there. As we've said over the past several months since talk of a U.S.-China trade war, have gotten more and more attention that on the one hand, the companies, the U.S. companies who are wanting to do business there, agree to give up those rights. Now, on the other hand, there are not a whole lot of other countries we do business with that are requiring it to the degree that China is. So that's not new news per se, but the fact that Canada, such a close trading partner and ally, is now on that list. I'm not seeing it. Looks as though that might be more for poor border enforcement. I'm not sure how that ties. Oh, and concerns about intellectual property protection for U.S. pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, there's just issues all around, and certainly everyone again is positioning, and we'll. You know, again, you know, are these trade wars or they're just negotiations? The NAFTA surprised me to see him sending a team over to China to deal with trade. I thought the NAFTA agreement was supposed to be finishing up, or maybe they did finish it up, but they haven't released the information on that yet. We'll see how that plays out. 1-800-375-4188. We are out of time right now, and I want to encourage you all to join us on Monday, and be safe this weekend. And until then, have a great week. Have a great weekend, Dave.
Melody, you do the same, please, and right. get those feet of yours dipped in the sand.
Only after we finish the shipping. So
only because you can.
Until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe.
Bye bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my